All right, so I'd like to begin with our first speaker, Michael Splane.
Does anybody wear a watch anymore? I use the little, I've got you too. So good morning. So what I'd like to present to you is, at the widest possible angle, a look at Alzheimer's and dementia issues from a global view. After many years working on the professional staff of the Alzheimer's Association, I've fallen into the world, the evil world of consulting, and among my clients is Alzheimer's Disease International, which is the global umbrella for national Alzheimer's associations around the world, which number close to 100. Let me say, there's my disclosure slides, and none of my clients have told me what to say. I want to thank ADI for some of their slides. And in the world of Alzheimer's and dementia, as you know, we have ongoing scientific developments that are literally changing the ground underneath our feet, those of us that have been working with people with Alzheimer's and their families for many years. So here's what I'm going to do. Here's my ground rule. When I say Alzheimer's disease, I mean Alzheimer's disease inclusive of other irreversible dementias and Alzheimer's detected at the time when cognitive symptoms are present. That's because, and I say that because, there is, at the very edge of Alzheimer's right now, there is more and more through imaging and other exotic and expensive technologies and techniques, the earliest possible detection of plaque buildup and other physical and biomarker symptoms. So I think of Alzheimer's when people are actually impaired. So I want to give you in 12 minutes or less a comprehensive view and a global view. And really point out that some things are the same everywhere. Some things are very same everywhere. Some things are different, too, and I'll talk about that. And then I want to make a couple of plugs. Today, when we talk about Alzheimer's disease in our society and in most societies around the world, people are definitely focused on the middle and later stages of Alzheimer's disease. If you will, imagine this as a bell curve. But in fact, with scientific change and social change, there's a lot going on beyond what the public and the public policymaker and what the, I would even argue, medical and public health community think when they think Alzheimer's disease and dementia. One major change in the last 7 to 10 years globally has been the earlier diagnosis of people with Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. They have impact in terms of what people think about Alzheimer's disease, about how Alzheimer's Association act, and about who is engaged in trying to describe and define the problem of Alzheimer's disease. They have impact far beyond their actual numbers, because in raw numbers, people getting diagnosed in the early stage are still a microscopic number of people compared to the estimates of prevalence. Still, this is a very important development, and from a public health perspective, it's a very interesting development because we're no longer just listening to the voice of the family and the professional caregiver, who was the voice, who was the representation of what does it mean to live with dementia, when we were only dealing with people diagnosed in the middle and later stages of the disease. We're actually hearing from the people themselves. But here's the punchline. I recently presented this comprehensive approach at a European conference and talked about this big change in the Alzheimer community. Keep in mind, I'm aging. I've been working with people with Alzheimer's since 1986, started in, actually here in Boston a long, long time ago. And I talked about this as a big change, this early stage voice and movement within the community. And the folks from two Eastern European Alzheimer's associations said to me, what's this big change you're talking about? We don't get it. And I realized that their Alzheimer's associations are less than 10 years old, and this is Alzheimer's as they've known it from the beginning of their associations. They don't see it as a big change. So we're no longer just in the Alzheimer's organizations around the world. I would argue that the Alzheimer's Association, for example, should have been called the Alzheimer Caregivers Association until a very short period of time, because now we're more inclusive. But the edge is even going even further. We're now at the scientific edge of pre-symptomatic detection. This is the detection of the buildup of plaque and the tangling of neurons through imaging. And when you hear about prevention trials in the United States, Alzheimer's prevention trials, many of them are focused on getting a substance into our bodies that will interrupt the buildup of plaque and thus prevent the cascade that leads to dementia. This is where we end up with this complicated system of people with Alzheimer's with and without dementia. Dementia, of course, being, in my mind, not equal to Alzheimer's. It's in my mind, people say, what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? And the biggest thing I say is, what's the difference between fever and a UTI? Because dementia is a cluster of symptoms, just like a fever might be, and it must be run to ground somehow to figure out what it is. So we're on the edge of pre-symptomatic detection, and way, way to the left. Yes, we're in Boston. We moved to the left. Come on, political jokes. I'll do Red Sox Yankees next. How's that? Way to the left is a lot of thinking and a lot of solid work, and you'll hear about some physical activity and cognition later in this talk, but a real sense that there is something to be done on a primary risk reduction or prevention basis. The good news is, you know, from a public health perspective, depending on where we place our intervention, we can affect more or less people. And by the way, what's going on the right-hand side of this curve hasn't stopped changing either, because in fact, the evidence base for what to do to support carers and people living with the disease has never been stronger, up to and including the level of random clinical trials, up to the level and inclusion of doing things through random clinical trials as a measure of proof. My point here is to say that we still have a social point of view about Alzheimer's, that it is the middle and later stages. And in the words of a state legislator from Kansas, the person must be old, they must be disabled, and they must be a public charge because they're a Medicaid beneficiary living in a nursing home. That's an actual state legislator. That's the public view. And it's really challenging because scientifically and otherwise, it's much more comprehensive. Alzheimer's is becoming a worldwide movement. This is a slide that shows the member countries. You see that Africa is quite underrepresentative, but that is changing. There have actually been two continental meetings on Alzheimer's in Africa in the last year. Yep, I see. Wow, that's a big typeface. Thank you. So there have been, within the last year, one of them hosted by the government of Mauritius, which is that little dot to the other side of Madagascar, and another one recently in Nigeria. So even as the world is aging, and we estimate now that there are about 36 million people living with dementia worldwide, that number will double and continue to increase through 2050, unless we find something more scientifically. But here's the really important point when you take a global view, that it is the greatest growth of Alzheimer's disease and dementia in the world will be in lower and middle income countries in the next 20 to 30 years. It tracks the NCD epidemic that you may hear about in other sessions in this, and I think that's probably because the risk factors for dementia in later life map those. But you can see it's the lower and middle income countries that are going to be most affected. In fact, China and India will have more people with Alzheimer's disease in the next decade, growth-wise, than anywhere else in the world. There's a lot more global health recognition about Alzheimer's as a problem. The UN declared Alzheimer's disease to be the fifth non-communicable disease in its action in 2011. The Mental Health Gap Program of the World Health Organization has fabulous evidence-based tools both for supporting carers and for developing diagnoses of dementia, all developed in lower and middle-income countries for little and middle-income countries. They're the open-ended working group on aging. Love this name. My wife says, you're going to what? I said, the open-ended working group on aging. She said, it sounds like a bull session. I said, well, you know, it's a little bit it is. But in fact, it's a real watering hole where the consideration of the rights of older people on par with the rest of society at the United Nations is going forward. And there's also movement toward a Pan-American or PAHO OPS regional plan on dementia to be delivered by 2015. This report was a signature moment in the world of dementia. Thank you, Linda Anderson, because you helped inspire me for the title of this thing. I was a contributor to this, but Dementia, a Public Health Priority, was published by the WHO in April of 2011. If you want to get the web link or more information about it, but it's the first time the WHO recognized this problem. So what's the same around the world? Five quick things. More women than men are affected. both in terms of the number of people with the disease, but also the collateral impact of caregiving and lack of ability to participate in the social and economic life of societies. Families are the caregivers for people with dementia in their homes for most of the length of the disease everywhere in the world, rich countries or poor countries. All around the world, there is a huge gap between the prevalence estimates and the number of people who actually get a formal diagnosis that leads to chaos in their lives, expense in the healthcare system, and great difficulty as people can become marginalized by virtue of their behaviors. We're hearing an awful lot, for example, in some of the African countries about how people with dementia are being treated in a most marginalized way that you can imagine. Diagnosis comes late. It comes late in the process, and many people with Alzheimer's disease around the world have comorbid chronic diseases. This means people who have problems with thinking and remembering and organizing tasks also have other chronic diseases for which they're self-managing, and their problems with thinking interfere with those problems, those other health problems. And of course, there's a general lack of attention to population health and risk issues around the world, though that may be changing. What's different, obviously, is culture. Culture is a huge filter for how we understand all disease, and I think how people see dementia is no different. Access to resources, very different, and as I said before, there are gender and economic issues as well. Let me make three shameless plugs. One, the Alzheimer's Association in the United States has, through its 800 number, 24/7 coverage in over 100 languages for both information as well as care consultation. I can't walk away without telling you that's a place to go if you've got questions. Second of all, Alzheimer's International website, alz.co.uk. Last, let me throw one more thought. If any of you are or think you are an Alzheimer's or dementia professional in the United States, I will tell you right now, you have more than almost anybody else in the world could imagine having. And if you're inspired and you want to spend a couple weeks, you want to spend a month, you want to spend a week in some other country sharing what you know about Alzheimer's disease and dementia, talk to me, because we're trying to put some people-to-people efforts together so that people can expand what's going on globally about dementia. In the back, there's some propaganda material, also a sign-in sheet for the international newsletter. That's an e-newsletter if you want to do that, and there's my contact information, and that's my 12 minutes. Thank you.